you know it's the morning tailgate. Vince Sapienza, Clay Baker, and you, Vinny Bonsignor, live on the road. He joined us from Kansas City, getting you ready for UNLV Kansas, as well as Raiders Ravens. That game can be heard Sunday morning here on Raider Nation Radio. We want to hear from you, though. 702-365-9200 is the phone number. We want to get your predictions against the Ravens. 702-365-9200. Very excited to have, Heidi Nolan's going to join us from UFC. They got the huge card, Noche UFC, this Saturday at the Sphere. She's a Senior Vice President of Global Brand and Creative. She'll join us at 8:30, 9 o'clock, Chris Thomas from Fusion Odyssey. As we get your thoughts up on the text line as well, when we're talking about predictions, a lot of people want to see, like Jorge, 805 Raider. He's like, obviously we need to run ball, but my prediction, Davante Adams, he's got to get going, 100 yards receiving and a touch, and we'll be in this game.
Ooh,
that's what I'm talking about.
I like that.
We need bold predictions on this week, too.
Nation, tailgaters, wake up. What are we doing right now? Like, where are it's Friday of game week. We need to hear from you. Where's the passion? Where's the bold takes? Where's the heated discussion? We want to hear from you. 702-365-9200. And obviously on a day where the brunt of the conversation is going to be about Tua Tagovailoa, his health, his a lot of the questions being talked about what his future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, it just goes to show you, obviously, the health of the player is of most importance, but because of the position he plays, there's a bigger spotlight, Clay, frankly. It's just quarterbacks, right, wrong, indifferent. It's a bigger spotlight. And Gardner Minshew has a pretty big spotlight on him this weekend, I would say. We talked about Zamir White. You know, we know the defense is going to be called upon to kind of lead this team, but Gardner Minshew's got to, he's got to do some things. His numbers, you look at his numbers from last week, and you sit there, and if you didn't watch the game, you're like, oh, Gardner had a good game. But a lot of dinks and dunks, didn't really push the ball down the field, 2-3, maybe over 15 yards. Just not nearly enough. Not threatening enough, not dangerous enough. He needs to do more. And again, a product goes hand in hand. The run game, the offensive line, it all works together. That's why football is as great a sport as it is, because it takes so many pieces for something to come together. The Raiders need a lot of it to come together for it to be in a good way. But, we gave our takes on Gardner Minshew earlier in the week. I didn't think he had a particularly great game. He just looked impatient at times, not waiting for guys to get open, namely and specifically Davante Adams.
Yes.
Did not push the ball down the field. Yesterday, offensive coordinator Luke Getsy met with the media, and he was asked for his evaluation of one Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, I mean, the pass game, the explosives weren't really our issue, right? We hit our mark as far as getting those out there, and he had a couple plays that, obviously he wishes he had back. But going out there for the first time as a unit, I thought he did a lot of really nice things. I think there's a lot of things that were effective. I mean, obviously, was it 28 to 35-ish or something like that? And I thought, going out there and just got to eliminate the turnover part of it, right? If he gets rid of those two, and obviously the one was – an egregious error that he knows that we can't let that happen. And then, Zamir had the fumble before that. And so we get rid of those two plays, I think we're in really good shape and we're talking about different stuff. And that's what this game usually comes down to, right? Our league is built on, like, not turning the ball over and putting your defense in tough situations like we did at the end of that half. I mean, we're in great position. Just did a great job, converted that third down, which was awesome. And then now we're rolling in to go get some points. And then that was just a momentum killer for us.
Raiders offensive coordinator Luke Getsy, we've talked about it. We don't need to continue to harp on it. That play at the end of the half can happen. Probably will never happen again the way it did. Gardner Minshew has taken those shotgun snaps and those quick throws thousands of times, whether it's in the NFL or at Washington State with the late great Mike Leach, high school, whatever. I mean, it's probably never happened. Probably won't ever happen again. It did happen in week one. Was a costly error, but I mean, Clay, simply he has to push the defense back more by threatening.
There has to be a threat downfield, and that begins with at least you have an elite wide receiver like Davante Adams, and you have to have some sort of intentionality about, all right, if he doesn't appear to be open or doesn't appear that route is going to be open, realize that Davante knows that too. And he's going to find a way to get open. He's going to find a way to get separation. He's great at it. And at the same time, if you start rolling, Devontae has some sort of intuition that he knows when that's happening. As we saw several times on all 22, Devontae was constantly looking back and running towards the ball and try to run towards Gardner to get open and to find these kind of completions that are downfield. So it's not like he's all alone out there.
Yeah, it's a collective. And everything we've said, we basically heard Luke Getsy talk about yesterday, like, don't turn over the ball. We're still fine. And he said he wasn't worried about the explosive plays because he says they were hitting their mark on different things. They just weren't sustaining drives. And that's the other part where you talk about the run game. The opening drive, you hit an 8-yard motion, little out to Jacoby Myers on first down. You're ahead of schedule. And then back-to-back zero runs ends the drive.
Right.
You know, though that's, again, as much as we can say Gardner needs to push the ball down the field, again, it all starts with the running game. We're going to be a broken record on this until we see it. And if we don't see it on Sunday, guess what we're going to talk about next week, Clay? We're going to talk about the run game some more.
Getsy's right. You know, listen, you got two turnovers at midfield in a defensive slobber knocker, a slugfest. Those matter, okay? Mm-hmm. So you know that the pressure will be on. What the Ravens do on defense is very strong. Obviously, they got a new coordinator, and they got some new pieces as well. But that system, the foundation, has been there, not only to get pressure, but to be this ball-hawking secondary that scares the rest of the league. So you got to start playing with some confidence. It's not like you don't have anything to work with. And for the run game itself, I was kind of thinking, all right, maybe there might be a little switch up in personnel. But as Vinny Bonsignore lighted up, like, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson doesn't appear that he's going to be, you know, available for this game to at least to start. Who knows how that'll all work out? But there needs to be an answer because you can't have a repeat performance in week one. And what will week two show us? Because I would have to think that for Gardner, they have to start opening up the field. You know, you got to lighten the box up. So spreading out more guys, I would think that maybe you start the game with some of that instead of doing, you know, the jumbo formations to start. I would maybe think to see, like, the first quarter, a lot of spread.
I'm confident the running game will be better this week. Does that mean they're going to win? I don't know that answer. I am confident that this run game is going to get right. I also thought it was interesting. Luke Getsy was asked about the lack of 12 personnel. Again, they only had 60 snaps. I believe the number of 12 personnel with two tight end sets that they ran was 15 out of those 60, which is a much lower number than we all kind of expected during training camp and the preseason, things like that. But when asked about that, what I found interesting was Getsy was basically saying, well, to be honest, you know, a lot of that is dependent on being able to run, play fake, da da da. But the Chargers were treating Brock Bowers every time he lined up as a slot receiver. Even when he wasn't in the slot, they were treating him as a receiver the way they defended him and lined up. That's fascinating. This is a guy, this was a rookie making his debut, and they already had the respect for what he had done. That is a positive going into Baltimore, because now you already hear the other team having the respect for the weapon that is Brock Bowers.
And I would like to see more of that, more intentionality for both Bowers and Mayer as this offense gets going, because that's a major matchup problem for any defense to get Bowers on a linebacker or Mayer against a corner. Let's get in more of this in your prediction. 702-365-9200. Let's go out to the Carolinas, slithering through the tall grass with Snake Man. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm just trying to navigate some nitwits in traffic, so just bear with me here.
Be safe.
Take a big, deep breath.
Oh, I've got it now. Okay, we're good. So, you know, a couple things. You know, this is no disrespect to the previous triumvirate you guys have had on your show, but this combination, Vince, Vinny, Clay, you're the rock. This is a winning combo, in my opinion. So just, you know,
thank you.
You guys are just awesome, man. I mean, you guys bring so much to the table my daily day. I wish I could talk every day with you guys. I just don't always have the opportunity. But we'll just touch on a few things. You know, Big Johnson's been a big, big disappointment so far. You know, the Raiders drafted this guy in the second round where they did for obvious reason, and it was never more clear than last week. I mean, the interior is getting just blown up, and it's, you know, I hope that Telesco, I don't believe in gods, ghosts, or, like, you know, voodoo and curses, but I hope Telesco didn't bring his crap pot injury luck over from the Chargers, because that sure as hell seems like what's going on right now. This is crazy, but I just hope that, like, somehow, you know, we can get this guy in sooner than later. But we're asking a lot for him to go from a center in college, where, by the way, he did play right guard in college. Mm-hmm. We're asking him to go to left guard now in the pros. So to think there's not going to be some needed assimilation there, that would be naive to think that he's going to just jump right into the fold. I'm hoping I'm wrong on that, as most of us are. But we need this guy to step up already and get in there and get going, get this run game going. Now, I don't know if you guys got my text from yesterday or not, but I was kind of like, I'm a little concerned with Minshew and his footwork. And, I don't know if you guys noticed, but he's throwing off his back foot a lot. I think Marcus pointed it out, too, in some of his Tape Don't Lie stuff. But is that not the job of the quarterback coach to address, first of all, to acknowledge or acknowledge and address that and correct it?
Well, Snake Man,
thank you, Snake.
Thanks for the call, and thank you for the kind words of the show. We're having a blast here on the tailgate. This is fantastic stuff. But let me get to your first point with Jackson Powers Johnson. I get it. It's frustrating. I mean, this, you want your second round picks. You want them to pop. You want them to play. You want them to pay off immediately. There's just that much value in the pick.
You want them to come out of the box ready to go.
I understand that 100%. That being said, I don't have much worry from what I have seen. Again, it's all been limited because he hasn't been able to practice that much. But from what I have seen with him in the silver and black, I have no worries in terms of the assimilation into the offensive line if and when that does happen. That being said, he is a rookie, so there's going to be growing pains no matter what. No matter how good he ends up being, there's going to be growing pains no matter what. What he brings to that position, in my opinion, is stability. I mean, he is a rock. He is an absolute beast of a man. And you talk about physicality, imposing your will. I mean, that's everything he does. So when we talk about when JPJ gets back and into the starting lineup, which I do think is coming. I know everybody wanted it to happen week one. Was not the case. Injuries happen. And to be honest with you, I know he's talking about voodoo and stuff with Telesco and the injury history that he had with the Chargers. Clay, I was actually kind of surprised at how light the Raiders were injury-wise throughout training camp, throughout the preseason, because that's the time of year where just devastating injuries come out of nowhere. I thought the Raiders were relatively healthy coming into week one, and then Malcolm Kutz goes down late.
Oh, yeah.
Tyree Wilson gets lost in the game. I mean,
I'm proud of us that none of us brought that up while it was happening, because I think there was like a silence among thieves.
Yeah, you
can't
say anything.
Like, we didn't want to say anything, but it was remarkable that the Raiders were one of the few teams that didn't have any major injuries to report.
It was really incredible. It truly was. So, JPJ, everybody wants him back on the field. There's no question. You can tell. Every time Antonio Pierce gets asked about him, you can tell. He's chomping at the bit. He's mm-hmm. like, I mean, yeah, he's getting close. He needs those reps. He needs those practice reps. They will come. Snake Man, they will come. Don't you worry. As for the other point was what, Clay? What was he talking?
Minshew's foot problem. He's been throwing off the back foot, and he was wondering, like, all right, how much is this on Rich Scangarello to start developing, or at least, like, either saying, like, look, this cannot happen again, or we go to somebody else?
Yeah, when you're talking, you know, a 6-7 year vet in the National Football League, you will kind of are what you are. It's tough to reinvent yourself, especially footwork. Now, I am by no means a quarterback expert in terms of the little intricacies. What I do know is footwork is hard to just pick up all of a sudden. I mean, there's different things you can do to improve it. But again, when you're this far in your career, right, and things start breaking down, you just go back to instinct. You go back to whatever made you comfortable when you were successful, right? And for Gardner Minshew, it's kind of what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. again, like I keep using the word impatient is what I saw week one. A product of that was the offensive line wasn't bad in pass protection, but they weren't great in it. So he was a little squirrely back there. I do think there's been an onus put upon him saying, hey, we need you to stay on schedule and stay in the pocket, because the book on Gardner Minshew is if his first read's not there, he's going to start moving around and things like that. And Antonio Pierce said when they named him starter, we need him to stay in the pocket and make the throws, go through the reads. So I'm curious if all that is just a little foreign, a little unfamiliar to him. And so that's what I'm curious if but when Snake Man talks about footwork, that it's just kind of all over the place, helter-skelter a little bit. I don't know if that's something can be fixed. Maybe it is. Rich Scangarello is an incredible NFL coach. He's been through a bunch of different organizations, worked with a lot of top quarterbacks.
Oh, no doubt.
So, again, yes. I'm no expert in that, but when I see it, it just seems like a guy reverting back to what makes him comfortable, and he's trying to be comfortable in an uncomfortable situation, which is the pocket.
And perhaps they were able to talk over, like, all right, what was wrong? Why didn't we have the rhythm, and why didn't you have the rhythm? And was it due to something you saw on the offensive line that didn't make you comfortable? Because that was obviously you're going to get pressure, but there's going to be pressure in every game. So wherein lies the problem? I think that gets corrected, because as we talked about throughout the week, there's a big jump between week one and week two for most teams who start out with a week one loss. On the text line, 702-365-9200, Poncho from the 209 is like, listen, I'd like to see the run game get established and the use of our tight ends, especially if all Minshew can do is dink and dunk. I would still rather get 5 or 6 yards here and there as opposed to zero and having to punt. And there are a lot of people that are lining up on the Zamir White bandwagon. Predictions, we're asking for predictions.
Yes, hit me. Let's go.
Zamir White, this is from Sal in the 623. We'll rush for 100-plus yards against Baltimore. Don in the 215, I think Zeus runs wild and Carlson kicks us into the win column.
Ooh. 24-21.
Don, I see you.
That's a prediction. Carlson kicks us into the win column.
We'll get more on the other side coming up next at 8:30. Heidi Nolan from the USC. We got to talk about Noche at the Sphere. This is a huge event on Mexican Independence Weekend here in Las Vegas. We'll talk to Heidi at 8:30, but also continue to get your thoughts and opinions and predictions at 702-365-9200. Hey, on Saturday is going to be a special day at Finley Nissan in Henderson in the Valley Auto Mall. It's Heisman House. The Heisman Trophy, one of sports' most sacred artifacts and trophies, comes to Finley Nissan in Henderson from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'll be there from 11 to 1. There'll be food, there'll be games and prizes, and you can post your photo with the Heisman Trophy. Tag Finley Nissan Henderson, and you'll win prizes. You can also bring a donation for serving our kids for an extra entry. But join me tomorrow, 11 to 1, at Finley Nissan in Henderson at the Valley Auto Mall with the Heisman Trophy. Are you kidding me? Back after this on Raider Nation Radio.
What's your prediction for the fight, then?
Prediction?
Yes, prediction.
Pain.
The queue is fired up. We are fired up because the predictions are starting to roll in. We just heard on the Dollar Loan Center text line, 100 yards rushing and Carlson kicking us to the win column. Now,
yeah.
I just say that. And the Chiefs, not known as a running team, 20 carries, 72 yards on the Ravens. 21 of those yards was on the Xavier Worthy end around touchdown.
Okay.
So 19 carries, 51 yards in true running. It's a tall task.
Bold predictions.
Raiders need to do it. We want to hear your predictions. It's Friday, Nation. Get up. Get loud. Make some noise. Get on the phone. Get on the text line. Jermaine, you're on the line. What's happening?
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, man, I just want to say I get everybody's hype about Zamir White, but I think Madison is going to do more damage than Zamir White. I just feel like Zamir White is overhyped. And I think Madison is going to end up stepping in and being the go-to guy this season, really, not just this game. I think this season, but we'll see what happens. And I hope that we get this win against the Ravens. I think everything comes down to third downs. You know, third downs, completing the third downs, and stopping the third downs is what's going to win this game. And it should have won us the last game. But that's all I really got to say, man.
I like it, Jermaine. Hey, do it again, man. Call again.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You know, that's an interesting take because Madison's got that dad strength.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that dad strength now. That's a real thing. Now, how long it lasts, it obviously, dad strength, we saw Sunday in L.A. Does that carry over to Baltimore? I'm not sure. Those are some sleepless nights, as you remember, Clay. Those are some sleepless nights. I'm sure he's got plenty of help. Plenty of help.
You almost have to stack the deck with the help. You have like 17 people in your house because you have to sleep at night. She's with the baby all day. She's expecting you to get up. And there's times when you do want to get up.
Yeah, you do. You're infatuated with with your offspring, your spawn, your offspring, if you will. You know, it is an interesting take, though, on Alexander Mattison, because as we saw, you know, when the Raiders got down, Alexander Mattison was featured a lot more because of his pass-catching abilities. Obviously, Zamir White was not entrusted with those duties come week one. I know that's something in the offseason he said that he wanted to evolve in his game was his ability to be a three-down back, catch those third down passes, the dink and dunks. Alexander Mattison is more suited for that at this present moment, which is why I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a pretty equal dose in terms of touches. But when it comes to running the rock, Zamir White's going to get the brunt of it. He's earned that. And until he starts proving otherwise, and again, last week, nobody did well in the run game. Mattison had a couple runs, but so did Zamir. You know, even if you take the fumble away, he had a couple good bursts that you're like, okay, you can start to feel good about. But make no mistake, Zamir White is still the number one guy. Mattison, though, definitely making a case to get some more touches. And Antonio Pierce even admitted, we're going to go with the hot hand.
Yeah, I think anybody can help us win a bigger role. But, you know, to be honest, I thought Zamir had some good stuff there, right? We had a penalty, we had a fumble, and he backed that up right after the fumble, another 8-yard run. Those are the kind of runs we expect, 16, 12-yard runs, 8-yard runs to get going. Alex, I thought, did an outstanding job. More important, I know he had a great catch and hurdle, but then just in pass pro, very physical. You know, he got the tough yard, so I've said it before, whoever can help us win the hot hand, we'll roll with that.
That was Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce. As we continue to look ahead to week two, we're going to pivot for a moment, and we're going to get ready.
Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Noche UFC 2. Fight week well underway. The most historic, the most anticipated, the most excitable fight week in the history of the company is happening. UFC 306 at Sphere Las Vegas tomorrow night. Oh, my goodness. I have been at the Fight Week festivities all week. The anticipation has been building for months, Clay, but this week it has taken to a whole new level. And to help set the stage, if you will, Heidi Nolan, Senior Vice President of Global Brand and Creative for the UFC, joining us here on the Morning Tailgate. First things first, Heidi, are you just coming from one of the secret rehearsal meetings over at the Sphere? Have you gotten any sleep?
Good morning. Well, I'm running on 3 hours of sleep as of now, so it has been a very fast pace, intense pace, if you will.
The coffee is
not
flowing,
sleep.
No doubt. Well, you guys
are
working so hard, you know, going to the events and the media events. I could see you guys, you know, just behind the scenes, just doing everything. Everything's got to be just right. You guys were talking on the creative panel just a couple days ago about how you guys are going to be doing rehearsals and testing stuff out right up until doors open Saturday night at Sphere. That sounds stressful.
It comes with a little stress. There are some challenges, but, you know, it's a really exciting event for us. We're really steadfast on delivering an event that is truly one of a kind. Everyone's so passionate about it, and we're going to do what we have to do to bring this to life.
Heidi Nolan here with us, Senior Vice President, Global Brand and Creative with UFC, getting you ready for Noche UFC at the Sphere. When did this seed get planted that you wanted to do this event, and especially on this weekend?
Well, the seed really was planted after Noche UFC last year. We held our first Noche UFC event at T-Mobile Arena. And quickly after that, Dana decided we were going to hold our next event at Sphere for a variety of reasons that he explains better than anyone. But it really kicked off roughly 9-10 months ago, the planning for this event. And, you know, Mexican Independence Day weekend There's a long tradition of holding meaningful combat sporting events on Mexican Independence Day weekend. And so that was really important to us to continue to honor that tradition, to really honor the Mexican fighting spirit in a meaningful way. And what better venue is there to do that in than the Sphere?
Heidi, obviously, as you know, Super Bowl was just held in Las Vegas, and that is a lift of in itself, and it's comparable to none in terms of the football world. I'm curious, of all the events, and you guys are the kings and queens of big-time events as it comes to combat sports and just putting on a show entertainment-wise, how does this compare? Like, what are we talking about in terms of the magnitude? We've heard Dana White say $20 million has been poured into it, but when you're talking about prepping for a T-Mobile Arena fight, a fight at MSG in Canada, over at Abu Dhabi, how much bigger was this undertaking?
This is remarkably different, a different undertaking than anything we've ever done before. A true first of a kind. For a standard UFC card at T-Mobile or other arenas around the world in Abu Dhabi, the heavy work begins about 3 months out from the event. Sphere is truly unlike any other venue, and that uniqueness presented really exciting challenges right from the start. We kicked off our process of understanding the challenges, what we were facing, the work back schedules, roughly 9 months ago. Unlike traditional arenas, Sphere has an immersive 160,000 square foot LED media display which creates an entirely different environment, both for the live audience and the global viewers tuning in. So our overall challenge was figuring out, how do you adapt our production to leverage the cutting edge capabilities while still really maintaining the core energy of a UFC event? And so to address those challenges head on, priority number one was assembling a robust team of creative collaborators, experts in their fields, to really problem solve and deliver an exceptional experience. And again, that started 9 months ago. We would have loved to have even more time. it really is a remarkable undertaking.
Cool. Well, that's the thing. Like that's what, the Sphere, they open up. They want to make sure, like, even a Ben and a residency like U2, every night will be the greatest U2 show you've ever seen. The Grateful Dead, Fish. You know what I mean? It's like they want to make the very good into becoming the very great because it's being held at that venue. What were some of the things that you learned about working with the people over at Sphere about how interesting and how detailed they are, but also how they make singular events the best that they may have ever seen, not only all year, but perhaps ever?
Working with the Sphere team has truly been a meaningful collaboration. I think that because the venue is so new, we're learning to execute together, especially around our event, right? That they have held concerts here, which is a vastly different event than a live sports event. And so it was really important that we work together to understand how we were going to not only address the in-venue experience, but the experience for the fans tuning in from home. Mm. If you think about it, concerts are really an in-venue experience. The NFL draft, which was held here back in June, was more of a broadcast experience. Mm-hmm. This has to be both. And so leveraging the vast knowledge of the Sphere team, bringing in our creative collaborators like Silent House Productions and Blink, and our award-winning director and producer who created these amazing films that celebrate the Mexican culture, it was really important and a learning experience across so many different touch points. One of the first challenges that we had to address was, how do you light the octagon in the Sphere? Most of our venues have a traditional truss structure jumbotron that hangs about 30 feet above the octagon. Well, you can't do that here. That would obstruct views. And so our team of collaborators really put their heads together, some very smart people, to determine how we light the octagon. And the solution was doing that from behind the LED plane. So again, the entire process has been so collaborative, probably my favorite aspect of this entire event, just working with some really amazing people.
Heidi Nolan, Senior Vice President, Global Brand and Creative for UFC. We are setting the table for Noche UFC Dos, the first event, live sporting event at Sphere. And it was interesting during that creative panel, you guys were talking about, you know, some of the challenges that this project has brought. And there was at one point saying there's five people in the world that can solve the current problem we have right now. Four of them are in the building. And if they don't know it, then we don't have the answer to it. That's just how meticulous and fragile this project is leading into Saturday. But Heidi, I'm curious. You know, Dana has wanted to keep this under wraps. Well, not a lot getting out. We know there's going to be a film broken down into six parts, different worlds being brought into the Sphere. Have your friends and family just been bothering you to no end trying to get some sweet details out of you?
They have, and I've actually asked them to stop texting me. Like, let me focus, people. It's as a creative, this is just an immensely exciting opportunity for me, and my personal journey. It's incredibly exciting to be part of the first live sports event at an iconic venue. We are a brand that leads. You know, one of our brand maxims is be first. And it's something that I strongly adhere to. It's a great, this event is a great example of how we operationalize that. And so Dana, you know, holding things, the creative, close to the chest, I think is just who we are. You know, we mm-hmm. want the experience for everyone to be as exciting and powerful and jaw-dropping as it has been for us. And that anticipation and that excitement to see the creative for the first time in the Sphere, you just can't describe it. And so I think, you know, I have given some hints to my family and friends. They've all signed NDAs.
What? We can verbally sign one over the air right now if you want to drop any little nuggets.
Yeah, DocuSign, we'll send it to you.
Yeah, right. But I have asked them to stop texting me, especially in the last 2 days. Just stop.
What could you share, though, as far as, like, people who want to see, like, you know, the weigh-ins, the fan experience? What is something that you think people will really marvel at?
Well, we do have our traditional Fight Week activities here at the Sphere. Nothing's traditional, though. So our weigh-in today at ceremonial weigh-in is at 7 p.m. this evening here at Sphere. We have a stage, this amazing massive stage set up in the parking lot. We will also have the UFC fan experience today from 4 to 7 p.m., as well as tomorrow from 12 to 4 p.m., both in the parking lot, the weigh-ins and the fan experience, free and open to the public. At the fan experience, we'll have immersive activations, as well as partner integration with the Cuervo Lounge and Monster sampling. We've got Bud Light here. And then both days across the fan experience, we'll have fighter meet and greets. We've got Yair Rodriguez here, Chito Vera, Justin Gaethje, Brandon Moreno. We'll have a fighter Q&A before the weigh-ins. And then tomorrow, when fans, the minute they step into the atrium, it's an immersive takeover. Mm-hmm. They are going to feel Dana's love letter to Mexico, literally from the minute they walk in. So really excited about what we're bringing to the fans tomorrow. Just really can't wait.
You know, this really feels like an International Fight Week Part 2. And I was going to say a smaller version, but there's nothing small about what the UFC does. So this feels even more massive than all that. Last thing before we let you go, Heidi, I know there's some unique merchandise that the UFC has put together, that Creative has created. I mean, the artwork looks fantastic. When you see it on the exosphere of the Sphere, it is mind-blowing. I'm just curious, do you have a favorite piece of merchandise so that when fans go out to the fan experience or try and get some, you know, one-of-a-kind stuff, they're like, that's what we need to get?
Well, for the first time ever, we designed a custom commemorative Noche UFC fight kit for this event. It's definitely my favorite piece. We designed it in collaboration with Venom, our outfitting partner, and Jorge Gutierrez. Jorge is an award-winning animator, writer, and director. He served as a creative consultant on this event for us. He's from Mexico City, so he really brought an authentic voice to the design process. What I love about the fight kit is it's representing the Mexican culture and fighting spirit in a really authentic, meaningful way. It pays tribute to Mexican independence, but also the revered gods of ancient Aztec mythology. Very, very well done. Beautiful pieces. Each god's essence is like intertwined into this cool visual telling the story of power and resilience and unity that is so apparent in the Mexican culture. So that piece is my favorite. I think fans are going to love it. The fighters will be wearing it fight night, which is just really cool and a great way to bring them into the storytelling of the night.
Well, I'm a size large for the fight kit, so just whenever Hunter wants to send that over to me, you know, I'll make sure we put it on display. Heidi Nolan, Senior Vice President of Global Brand and Creative for UFC. Heidi, thanks so much for taking some time. We know you're super busy, super slammed, but thank you so much, and best of luck this weekend.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you, Heidi. It was fascinating, and this is just one of those great events that's built for Las Vegas, but you could tell as UFC, as they always say, be first. They always want to do things big and better than the last one, but this one could top them all, and you know, it's great to see the Sphere just welcoming everybody in and trying to do something different, uh-huh, because absolutely, this will be their first live sporting event.
I mean, just being at that press conference last night, seeing that gigantic stage outside of the Sphere, it felt like a massive, massive, massive event. And again, like I said, the UFC doesn't do anything less than huge and spectacular. If last night, Dana wouldn't even call last night a taste of what you're going to see, cool, because it was nothing. But the ceremonial weigh-ins will have fireworks today. But he urges everyone, if you're going to the fight, if you're lucky enough to get a ticket and lucky enough to have the money to get it to spend on a ticket, get there early, get in your seats. You do not want to miss a minute.
Right, and you can take the monorail. There's many different ways to get in there, so make sure you do it. And it's going to be an amazing spectacle. In fact, we'll talk to Chris Thomas at 9 o'clock from Fusion Odyssey, former Super Bowl champion. We'll talk about Raiders Ravens, of course. And we'll also hear from Antonio Pierce in the third hour at 9:30. We'll go live to Raiders HQ for his press conference. And don't forget, Raiders Road Rally, Barcode Burger, Sunday morning. I'll be there. That's on East Flamingo, east of Maryland Parkway. An awesome venue. Great food, great people. And it's the Coors Light specials will be on draft. But I tell you, Raiders Road Rally brought to you by Coors Light. They hook you up. There'll be Raiderettes there, Raiders alumnus, memorabilia, gift cards, jerseys, and tickets to an upcoming game. Join me Sunday morning, Barcode Burger, East Flamingo, east of Maryland Parkway, Raider Nation. 702-365-9200 is the number. You can hit us up on the phones and the text line. In the third hour, it's packed. We'll have Chris Thomas. We'll do our $200 pick'em and then hit up Antonio Pierce live from Raiders HQ for his Friday press conference. Let's get to Las Vegas with Raiders 66. 66, today we're looking for bold predictions. Let's hear it.
Bold predictions. Okay, well, I predicted from last week Al Davis was spinning in his grave because we didn't go deep.
Yeah,
I think they're going to take a couple of deep shots this time to open things up. And, you know, I look back at the game that Gardner Minshew beat Baltimore last year. And he didn't have a particularly great game, only 227 yards passing and a touchdown. But Zach Moss, the running back for the Colts, ran the ball 30 times for 122 yards. I think that is the key. I don't think that Zeus or Madison is going to get that many carries. I think combined, they get the ball going that way. And it might not be just runs. It might be the little swing passes. But the other key to that victory that the Colts had was the kicker had 4 50-plus yard field goals. So I think that Carlson, as one of the earlier testers said, is going to be a very big key. When they get close, they're going to have to put points. And I think that's it. And I think the prediction I've got is that the Raiders are going to have to be offensively creative, meaning that when they line up in a tight formation, do the play-action pass out of a tight formation, and conversely, go to the spread and run the ball. Because everybody was jam-packed in that Chargers game, And I think they need to loosen things up a little bit with the long passes, just to spread them out, and then throwing out of the spread formation. And I think that could be the key. And Vinny brought something up, you know, about the Ravens being a franchise that you want to emulate. That goes back to the old Raiders. They were always there. So if the Raiders can get back to their past, we have got, we're cooking with gas. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, just a quick note, Dan. CFNBC the other day came out with a valuation chart of NFL teams.
Okay.
You know who the Raiders just passed? The 49ers.
Ooh.
The 49ers. Yeah, that's,
yes.
That's
money, money, money. Oh, that brings the autumn wind. Hey, Raiders 66. Yeah. That was excellent, man. Thank you for doing it. Have a
money.
Great weekend. Monday.
I wish I had some of that money.
In just a short amount of time. I mean, fortunes have been radically reversed.
Daniel Carlson, the dark horse. That's my takeaway from the tailgate this morning. Everyone is on the, you know, you can say what you want. Everyone's thinking the run game's going to get. It's Daniel Carlson who we're talking about as the hero come Monday morning. I like it.
This is good. Jimmy in Vancouver, bold prediction. He says, final score 27-23, Raiders protect the ball. I also predict a defensive touchdown on a pick and a fumble recovery or fumble recovery. Bowers and Devontae will have 18 to 20 receptions.
Whoa!
Between them and a couple of TDs. Jimmy in Vancouver, I like it, my
18
friend.
18 to 20 between?
Between them, combined.
Devontae and Brock.
You know what? I think preseason we were kind of like hoping for those kind of
that is a bold prediction,
right,
but that is not a crazy bold like that's very much in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that's the ballpark we want to be into. And all right, we'll take a quick break. We're coming up next. Chris Thomas, Fusion Odyssey, former Super Bowl champion. He will join us. We'll break down Raiders, Ravens next. It's Morning Tailgate.